Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk Chicago's 21st podcast. My name is John Zagluo, owner and operator of the site. We have a lot to get to today, a lot of sports news, but first, just a few quick announcements. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram, all at John Zags. And also, if you're looking for a place here in the local area to shop for sports apparel and other novelty items, go to Moochie World, a peculiar place, gift shop, and more at the Tinley Park Down Shopping Center. Its address is 7913 171st Street in Tinley Park. You can call them at this number, 773-796-8224. Again, that's 773-796-8224. We're going to start off today talking about the Bulls and their woes as of late. They have dipped under the 500 mark with two embarrassing losses recently to the Timberwolves and the Phoenix Suns. So what's going on and how can we sort all of this out? Well, first of all, I did publish an article yesterday on the site discussing the Bulls and how they need to find a new winning philosophy. That's the way I put it. And there are multiple meanings to what I'm trying to say. Now, first of all, what I expressed in the article is the fact that management has to stop masquerading what they're doing. We remember when the Bulls got Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade and everybody was freaking out about the fact that they got such big names. But look at the stats behind those big names, and that's what I was trying to get at. Rondo's in his age 30 season, having most likely the worst season of his entire career. I mentioned also that his shooting percentages, points per game, free throw percentage, all at career lows at this point. And Dwayne Wade, who's having a good year by, you know, anyone else's standards. But in reality, according to his own standards, he's not doing that well. His shooting percentage is currently at a career low, and it's 50 points lower than his career average. At 35 years old, of course this trend is understandable, yet the question remains, why did the Bulls decide to sign Wade at the end of his career? So again, questions surrounding why the Bulls decided to take Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade, and the real reason is that they want to show off, they want to make it seem like they're trying to win now, they're trying to rebuild this team, but in reality, they're just making the situation even worse. I also talked about how the Bulls got rid of Derrick Rose, and of course, after his injuries, it seemed there was a mutual agreement here to have him leave, and certainly understandable. I mean, his statistics really dropped off, his play in game really dropped off after the injury, but right now he's not doing too bad with the Knicks, averaging almost 20 points per game. His shooting percentage has rebounded from its atrocious mark the year before, so he's having a resurgent year. Meanwhile, Rajon Rondo here is having one of the worst years of his career, and really one of the worst years in the NBA as far as shooting goes. So, with the Bulls in management, why did they decide to do this? See, instead of trying to trick fans and media into believing that the Bulls were the real deal, team management should have faced the facts with brutal honesty. I think that the Bulls should not have allocated unheard of amounts of money towards two players nearing the end of their respective careers. And again, I'm not trying to take away anything from what these two have done in the past, but the point is, their careers are closer to the end than they are to the beginning. But believe it or not, folks, there is a simple solution. There is a way to get rid of the Bulls' woes, but of course it will take some years. What the Bulls need to do right now, they have to stop committing themselves to making the playoffs every year by skating through going 41-41 or 40-42, because in the end, that's not going to help anybody. What they need to do is, instead of making the playoffs every year, they have to realize that in order to ever make another serious run at an NBA championship, they must begin the rebuilding process as soon as possible. Now, what that means is dumping Wade and Rondo, maybe abandoning a winning record for a couple of years. That also means dealing Jimmy Butler before the trade deadline next week, while his value is at its highest, and receive some highly touted future first-round draft picks. Just think about if the Bulls decided to trade Jimmy Butler, although it would hurt the team right now, imagine what they can get in the future if they trade him, especially now, considering he's having a career year statistically, but of course, he's been resurgent now for the last couple of seasons. Look, either way, the time is ticking for the Bulls right now. They have about a week until the trade deadline, and they have to decide what they're going to do. are they going to still try and make some sort of move towards the playoffs, but know that they won't make it past the first round, or will they come to their senses and realize that acquiring somebody like Jahlil Okafor, who has been tied to the Bulls recently, will not help the team out whatsoever? What they need to do is face the facts and begin the rebuilding process. Only then will they be doing all of Chicago a favor, because I can tell you right now, if they start rebuilding at this point, in the next 2 to 3 years, they will become the next Minnesota Timberwolves, for example. A team who, no, is not doing that great this year, but with players like Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and Zach LaVine, they will be a force to be reckoned with sooner rather than later. I'm not going to say that everybody agrees with this or that everybody wants to see the Bulls deliberately lose for the next couple of years, but the point remains that if the team decides to rebuild, they will be good eventually. You just have to give it some time. And on that note, we're going to move on now to some Chicago Bears news. Now, the Bears, we all know that their season ended dismally. They went 3-13, but there were a few bright spots. Jordan Howard finished second in the NFL overall in total rushing yards and made a Pro Bowl appearance as a rookie. He was even in the running for the Offensive Rookie of the Year award. So what a year it was for Jordan Howard. Here are some of his stats. 1,313 rushing yards, 6 touchdowns, he averaged 5.2 yards a carry and 87.5 yards per game. He also had a receiving touchdown and nearly 300 receiving yards. So once again, congratulations to Jordan Howard on really buoying the spirits of this team despite the dismal 3-13 record. Now that the offseason is underway for the NFL, the rumor mill is churning out different rumors each day about the Bears and their QB search. Now, the team has been tied to a number of quarterbacks in the NFL as well as draft picks, so the ones that they're tied to in the NFL include Colin Kaepernick, Tyrod Taylor, Tony Romo, Jimmy Garoppolo, and AJ McCarron. So yes, a lot of names are floating around right now for the Bears on the NFL level, but there's still the prospect that they could draft somebody, considering that they have the number 3 overall pick. They have been tied to a number of quarterbacks eligible for the draft, like Mitch Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, and DeShone Kizer. There are a lot of different options, which is a good thing for the Bears, but the question is, who will be the right fit here in Chicago? Now, I have to be honest here, as much as I am intrigued about the opportunity for the Bears to groom their own starting quarterback, I believe that at this moment, this year, they should not draft a quarterback. Why, you might ask? That's because I believe that in the next couple of years, there will be better quarterbacks available, like Lamar Jackson, the recent Heisman Trophy winner, for example. So by eliminating that class, let's look at who is on the market right now for the Bears. I will say right away that they should not get Colin Kaepernick. Now, although I do have a bias against quarterbacks who can run the ball as well as pass, the problem I have with Kaepernick is two things. One, he is an off-the-field distraction, as we've seen throughout the entire season. But number two, and that's most importantly, I believe he's only a West Coast quarterback. And what I mean by that is, he can only throw in warm weather. When he came here to face the Bears in a game this season, he only recorded 4 passing yards the entire game. 4 yards! And you're going to tell me that he's going to be able to keep up with the weather pattern here in the city of Chicago. It simply won't happen, and I believe that he should not come here to the Bears. Now, Tony Romo would not be a horrible idea, but the thing with him is that he's already 36 years old, so it depends on what the Bears want to do. If, like I said earlier, they're willing to wait the next couple of years to then groom their own quarterback, then Tony Romo would be an ideal fit. He'd only have 2 to 3 more years left, he'd be done, he'd be a veteran presence, and that would be it. But I simply don't know what the Bears want to do. Because remember, Jimmy Garoppolo is only 25 years old, and he's been Tom Brady's backup for a long time. This is a guy who does technically have NFL experience, but is still young. Do the Bears want to have him become the next franchise quarterback, or are they willing to hold out and wait to draft somebody? Just to sidetrack on Garoppolo for a minute, in a small sample size this year of three games, he had a completion percentage of 68.3, threw for 502 yards and four touchdowns. The key stat there is no interceptions. His QB rating was 113.3. So Garoppolo, again, although a small sample size, has proven that he can hang with the big guys here in the NFL. A.J. McCarron, meanwhile, has been the backup for a number of years for Andy Dalton and the Cincinnati Bengals, and he did play last year in the playoffs for the Bengals when they lost Andy Dalton to an injury. McCarron is another viable candidate, but one problem I do see with him is the fact that he might not be able to do well or perform well under pressure. In that one playoff game that he did start for the Bengals, he lost, threw for only 212 yards, had an interception and a touchdown, and his completion percentage was 56.1%. So again, McCarron, although he had some favorable stats last season in the regular season, the question still remains if he could perform under pressure. Now the final quarterback I wanted to touch on is Tyrod Taylor. And again, I have a bias towards quarterbacks who can run. I really like quarterbacks that can use their feet to make plays. Tyrod Taylor does exactly that. This year he led all NFL quarterbacks in rushing with 569 yards. He had over 3,000 passing yards at 3,023, 17 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions. He is a proven starting quarterback. This is the second consecutive year in which he has started for the Buffalo Bills. In his first year, he recorded a 7-6 record in games that he started, and this year, he went 7-8. So again, not the best of records, but you have to consider the whole picture and consider what kind of a team he was playing for. There still are two questions surrounding Taylor. First of all, he has no playoff experience, so we don't know how he would perform in a pressurized situation. And second of all, he's not necessarily a pocket passer. He likes to run in the pocket and make plays on his feet. How will that blow over with the Bears and their offensive system? Either way, it's great to see that the Bears have a number of options for their quarterback search. But one thing is for certain, they have to make a choice that will benefit them for now and the future. And with that, we're going to move on now to some Chicago White Sox news. Pitchers and catchers report today, February 14th. So we're going to give you a bit of a preview about what to expect this year from the Chicago White Sox. I must say that this year is not going to be good for the White Sox, but that is not necessarily a bad thing. What they have done this offseason is something that a lot of teams are continuing to shy away from doing, and that's facing the facts. The Sox decided to take a bold step and rebuild by dealing Adam Eaton and Chris Sale in separate trades to acquire Yoan Moncada and Lucas Giolito. In ESPN's evaluation of farm systems, the White Sox have leaped all the way up to 10th in baseball, so they're in the upper third of the league. What makes things even more interesting is that the team still has Todd Frazier, David Robertson, Jose Abreu, and Jose Quintana. The real question, and something that you're going to want to watch for the entire season, is whether these four players will be dealt and what will they get back for them. Speaking of David Robertson, currently the White Sox are still in trade talks with the Washington Nationals about dealing David Robertson for even more prospects. Of course, nothing is imminent and nothing has been decided upon yet, but nevertheless, both teams are still talking. And in a separate development, Jose Quintana, who we all know is on the trade block, has mentioned that he does want to stay with the Sox if it were up to him. Of course it's not, but it's nice to see that Quintana still stays loyal to the team who drafted him and groomed him to be the pitcher that he is today. And on a final note about the White Sox, I did want to mention some interesting non-roster invitees who will be attending camp with the team. Now, two of them who really jump out to me are former Cubs Rookie of the Year Giovanni Soto, who played a stint with the Sox beforehand, and infielder Everett Cabrera, who is a speedster and former NL All-Star. Now, first I'd like to talk about Everett Cabrera. He made the All-Star team in 2013 as a member of the San Diego Padres. He only played 95 games, but had 37 stolen bases and 108 hits. And although it's not guaranteed for him to make the Major League roster, he is a shortstop and second baseman. Who knows, maybe he'll outcompete players like Tyler Saladino and Carlos Sanchez and be given a chance to back up shortstop Tim Anderson and second baseman Brett Laurie. It's certainly not out of the question. For Giovanni Soto, he's really in the same shoes as Everett Cabrera. He has a good chance at making this Major League roster. Now, Soto did play for the Sox in 2015 as a part-time catcher and got 210 plate appearances, 187 at-bats, in which he recorded 9 home runs. Soto, again, the former NL Rookie of the Year with the Cubs in 08. He also was an All-Star that year and has had an up-and-down career, but according to the official White Sox depth chart on their website, the only catcher that they have right now is Omar Narváez, an up-and-coming rookie. So could Soto make the team and possibly mentor this young player and also serve as a reliable backup? Of course, time will tell, but certainly something to look forward to. And on a final note, the Sox will have their first spring training game of the year on February 25th at 2:05 as they take on the Los Angeles Dodgers. Make sure to tune in. And now I'd like to move on and talk about some Chicago Blackhawks news. The Hawks right now are second in the Central Division behind the Minnesota Wild with a 35-17-5 record. They're 5 points out of the first place spot. The Hawks recently won a game over the Edmonton Oilers 5-1. Richard Panik scored twice and had an assist. Patrick Kane also had a goal and 2 assists. In the latest NHL power rankings release, the Hawks have shot up to 3rd overall. They have gone a perfect 5-0-0 in the month of February, and they're all road wins. So, luckily for the Hawks, they're in a very comfortable position right now. They have leverage. They're not all the way up there, but they're certainly in contention to go to the playoffs. And as we know, once the Hawks make it to the playoffs, anything can happen, no matter what seed they are. And with the trade deadline approaching on March 1st, Hawks GM Stan Bowman has said that he does not want to be too aggressive like he has been in years past. But remember, the Hawks do have an opportunity to pick up a center like Martin Hansel or a winger like Patrick Eves and get a nice payoff. So don't count the Hawks out at the trade deadline, but also don't expect too much from them as we get into the final leg of the NHL season. And with that, I'd like to move on to our special guest. He's been on the show before. It's great to have him on today again. He is the TV voice for your Chicago Cubs. Please welcome Len Casper to the show. So hello everybody, we're back here on the show with Len Casper. Len, how you doing today? And thank you for taking time out of your day to be on the show.
Doing great, John. How you doing?
Doing very well, and very excited that you're here, so let's get started. So first off, I'd like to take a look back at what certainly was a historic 2016 season for the Cubs. I mean, they broke a 108-year-old championship drought and did so in quite dramatic fashion in Game 7 of the World Series. Chris Bryant was the first Cub ever to win the MVP since Sammy Sosa in 1998, and Kyle Hendricks led all of baseball in ERA. So what stood out to you the most about this past Cubs season?
Well, I think we could probably spend a couple of hours figuring out what the iconic moments were because there were so many of them. Game 7 might have been the best Game 7 in World Series history. The 103-win regular season, as you mentioned, everything kind of fell into place, and for a team that was expected to win, really from day one of spring training, it's really hard to do. I find in baseball, the team that everybody expects to win never seems to actually do it, and to have the Cubs go through all those expectations and then roll through the playoffs and some hiccups along the way. I mean, if you look at all three series, there were a couple of moments in each series where you wondered if the Cubs run was going to come to an end. Had they gone to game 5 of the NLDS against the Giants, they would have had to face Johnny Cueto at Wrigley Field. But the ninth inning in San Francisco in game 4 avoided that. They trailed in the National League Championship Series to the Dodgers before getting the offense going in Los Angeles and wrapped it up in six games, and then down 3-1 in the World Series to come back against the Indians. So this team dominated through the regular season, and then I thought battled some adversity in the postseason. So they kind of gave us a little bit of everything to watch. And for me, it made it a unique and special year that we may never see again.
Now, you mentioned expectations, and in this past week, the latest Bakota projections have been released, and the Cubs are projected to win the NL Central Division by going 91-71. Now, although these projections are rarely perfect, do you see the Cubs living up to these expectations? And to further that point, do you see the Cubs possibly winning another World Series here in 2017?
Well, I think they're the team to beat in the division for sure, and probably in the National League. The Dodgers and Nationals should be very good again, and both essentially return the same team they had last year. You know, the Cardinals, I know Pecota doesn't love their chances, but, you know, they did to the Cubs what the Cubs did to them last year, and that is took away one of their best players. The Cubs poached John Lackey and Jason Hayward last offseason. The Cardinals get Dexter Fowler this season, and if their starting pitching stays healthy, I do think the Cardinals have a chance to be pretty good. In terms of winning the World Series, I think baseball just has to play out. You know, as we saw through the playoffs, there are a lot of moments where things happen that you just don't expect, and I'm not sure a lot of people would have picked the Cleveland Indians to roll through the American League playoffs like they did. The Cubs to me are going to be the favorite going into this season once again, but a lot of things have to happen to go their way.
Now, you mentioned Dexter Fowler, and some small changes have happened to this 2016 championship roster. Of course, a significant subtraction was the loss of Dexter Fowler. So what are your thoughts on Fowler's departure, and do you think this was something that was bound to happen?
I was surprised he came back last year on February 25th. It was kind of the big story of spring training. It looked like Dexter was going to end up in Baltimore, but a deal that never did materialize ended up benefiting the Cubs. Whether or not the Cubs win the World Series without Fowler is certainly a great question to ask. So they got another year out of him, and, you know, he bet on himself, and it worked out. He ended up getting a great deal with the Cardinals. So, you know, the Cubs have a lot of outfield depth, and you hope Schwarber's healthy the entire year. They traded Soler to get Wade Davis, so the outfield's going to have a little bit of a different look. But I also think they needed to get rid of some of the quantity, because Javier Baez is going to play a lot. And if you want Ben Zobrist in the lineup, you're going to have to find a way to get him in there in the outfield a little more often this year than you did last year. So there are going to be a lot of moving parts, as we saw last year. That's going to continue again this season. They'll have probably a platoon at center for the most part with John Jay and Albert Almora Jr. Hayward can play there on occasion. Zobrist can play there if needed. So, you know, I think they feel very good about the depth they have, and I expect this offense to be as good, if not better, than it was last year.
Now, I wanted to shift to the Cubs playoffs again for a moment. Now, you weren't able to broadcast the Cubs playoff games on TV due to the fact with the national TV broadcast, but you were able to accompany Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer in the booth for the radio broadcast. So what was it like to actually be in the booth and witness the Cubs break the longest championship drought in the four major professional sports?
It was awesome. You know, I'm so grateful to Pat and Ron and to Mitch Rosen and everyone at the Score and CBS Radio who kind of made me part of their family. And, you know, we had a lot of network games this year. Okay. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
In terms of the radio, it was really fun. I enjoy doing radio. It's kind of how I grew up in the business. And because there is no local television during the playoffs, it was kind of the only way to get on the air. And I'm very grateful to the Cubs and the Score and Pat and Ron for having me be involved. And to be on the field to do interviews with the players after wins was awesome. It's a different perspective for me. And I enjoyed being a part of it every night.
Now, when you joined me on the show last time, last year, I'd mentioned that 2016 was your last one under your old contract, and you informed me that your goal is to stay in the Cubs booth for as long as possible. So how satisfying was it to find out that you received a new deal that runs through 2019?
Incredibly grateful, very happy. I don't take it for granted. By the end of this contract, it'll be 15 years with the Cubs, and it's the greatest job in the world, and my goal all along has been to spend the rest of my career with the Cubs, and hopefully the Cubs and the fans will have me for as long as possible, and you know, I can't wait to get going on the air here in just over a week to call games for the defending champs. I've thought about opening our first broadcast with the defending champion Chicago Cubs. It's something I really look forward to saying.
Now, in your free time, you work with Theo Epstein's Hot Stove Cool Music Benefit Concerts to help raise money for charity, as well as showcase some great rock talent. Can you tell us about its origins and its plans for this year, 2017?
Well, it started back with Peter Gammons and Jeff Horgan. Peter, the Hall of Fame sports writer. Jeff used to cover the Red Sox and in Boston, and then when Theo got hired, you know, big music fan, he became involved. And then when Theo came to the Cubs, had some Boston connections musically, and we all thought, hey, this would be great to bring this event to Chicago in the summer. So it's become this big two-headed monster, one in Boston, one in Chicago. And this year, it's going to be really fun because the normally winter event in Boston has shifted to the end of April because the Cubs are going to be at Fenway playing the Red Sox. So the Boston Hot Stove event will be that weekend, which should be just awesome. And then about a month later, June 2nd at Metro in Chicago, we'll have the event here. So it's going to be a busy month or so musically and baseball-wise, but I can't wait. And it raises the number one thing, John, is it raises a lot of money for children's charities. Theo's foundation, to be named later, has raised millions of dollars over the past decade and a half, and they've done some really great work.
That's great to hear, and it's great to see that, you know, all these people are getting together for a very good cause. On a final note, now I noticed through Twitter your announcement about the fact that you had kept a journal throughout the 2016 season documenting your personal routine and stories about this infamous Cubs season. You also mentioned that you were not deciding to publish it as a book. Will fans be able to read this journal, and can you give us a description maybe about its content and your idea behind keeping a journal throughout the year?
Well, it was a suggestion of a writer friend, whom I really respect, and he said, you know, you may just want to keep a daily journal throughout this season because it would be a fun exercise for you, and you never know if the Cubs do something special, it could be a really neat keepsake, and as we know, it was. I ended up writing about 70,000 words, so, you know, I had enough maybe to write a book. I decided in the end not to release it. There's so many Cubs books out there, I didn't want this one to kind of get lost in the shuffle. So I decided instead to release on Twitter just a few chapters here and there. And, you know, I think feedback's been pretty good so far. And people have kind of gotten into a little bit of what my routine is like on a daily basis. And, you know, if nothing else for posterity, it's nice for me to have. And who knows, maybe someday down the road I'll release the whole thing.
Len, I really appreciate you being back here on the show, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, John. Always a pleasure. Take care.
You too. So again, a special thank you to Len Casper for joining me on the show. I know he's very busy, and spring training is quickly approaching, but it was very nice of him to come and join me. And with that, let's get to our closing segment, starting with the odd sports story of the day. And this story comes from Draymond Green, a player on the Golden State Warriors. Now, as of late, he got a triple-double, but it was very unique. He only scored 4 points, but still finished with a triple-double due to 12 rebounds, 10 assists, and 10 steals. He became the first player in NBA history to have a triple-double with fewer than 10 points. So how do you like that? That is your odd sports story of the day. Now we're going to move on to our punchline of the day segment. So, here's the question. What does a hockey player and a magician have in common? The answer, both do hat tricks. That is your punchline of the day segment. And finally, our announcer's call of the day segment, my personal favorite and the viewer's favorite. Because Len Casper joined us on the show today, I'm going to have a call from him. So let me set the scene for you. This is early on in the 2016 season, and Jake Arrieta, once again, is throwing a gem. Although the Cubs are up 16-0, he has a no-hitter going against the Reds. We go to the bottom of the ninth, 2 strikes, 2 balls, and 2 outs on the batter. Len, take it away.
Here comes the 2-2. In the air, this should do it. Jason Hayward makes a catch. It's a no-hitter. Jake Arrieta has done it again.
That was fun.
His second no-hitter in his last 11 regular season starts. I say the sky's the limit. Maybe the universe is the limit for this guy.
What a great moment, and once again, what a great call by Len Casper. Really great to have him on the show today. And with that, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. I really thank you all for listening. Really appreciate it as well. Make sure to hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram, all at John Zags. Hit us up on Twitter at ShyTalkSports. And once again, thank you for continuing to listen to our sports coverage. Have a great day.